Hey, what you're about to listen to is the podcast version of what was a live radio segment on KPFA. Consequently, when you hear us give out a call-in number, you don't want to call it. If you're listening to this as a podcast, it is already too late, and nobody on the other end of that phone number is going to have any useful answers for you. You can, however, send in a question for our next episode by shooting an email to upfront@kpfa.org. You can also tune in for the next edition live and ask your question over the phone then. We normally air Monday mornings on KPFA just after 7:30 news headlines. All right, let's go to this week's Corona Calls.
We are talking about the latest news in COVID science and public health, and we are joined today by Dr. Peter Chin Hong, professor of medicine and infectious disease physician at UCSF Medical Center. Good morning, Dr. Chin Hong.
Morning, Ariel. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being with us. So on Thursday, the CDC said all people in the U.S. at least 6 months of age and older should get an updated COVID vaccine this fall. Dr. Chin Hong, I'm wondering if you can tell us what we learned from this CDC panel announcement and review why an updated vaccine would help and why the CDC's recommendation matters.
Yeah, so in the last spate of approvals and meetings of advisors and both the CDC and the FDA, there are two main recommendations. The first was that the vaccine would be one type in the fall, and so not, you know, two types like we've had two times ago, and that it would be based on JN1. And like you said, Ariel, it would be recommended for those 6 months and over. And that's because COVID is still causing a lot of deaths in the country, and not only deaths, but hospitalizations. So this is an attempt to really keep it, as low as possible in terms of disrupting hospitals and life. And the second thing is, of course, there are chronic complications of COVID too that could be mitigated by vaccines.
It sounded to me from some reporting, and please correct me, that there would be multiple new vaccines that could be on offer this fall, perhaps before the CDC panel's recommendation, but you just suggested there might be one vaccine. What I thought was that the Novavax vaccine would be targeting the JN1 variant, and that the Pfizer and Moderna shots were designed to target a KP2 variant. These are all part of the FLIRT mutations that our listeners might be familiar with. What do we know about the differing shots and what will be on offer?
Yeah, so they're all relatives of JN1. That's kind of the parent or variant. So KP2 is kind of a child of JN1. Because it takes longer to make the vaccine in the traditional way, and that's where Novavax comes in, they decided before to bank on JN1, the parent. It's kind of like the tree trunk. And that's what their vaccine is going to be based on. So Pfizer and Moderna, because they're more nimble and because KP2, which is a child of JN1, is more common right now, as is KP3 and KP1, those are the FLIRT variants, they were able to pivot and make something that was more closely resembling what might be circulating in the fall and might be circulating in the winter. But the reason why I said JN1 is because they're all closely related to JN1.
Got it. We are taking your questions about COVID science. If you are listening and you have questions for Dr. Chin Hong, please give us a call. The number to call is 1-800-958-9008. Starting in with a listener question that came in by email, we had a listener, Amy in Oakland, who was curious about Paxlovid. Amy said, we heard there may be no need for people under 65 with no risk factors to take Paxlovid now, but I thought Paxlovid might help prevent long COVID. What is the latest information regarding Paxlovid and the prevention of long COVID?
I think over time, as the population got stronger, and when I say stronger, I mean from an immune perspective, in terms of immune protection, with bouts of infection and or vaccinations, We're finding that in this era that Paxlovid probably gives the biggest bang for the buck in those who are older than 65 and those who are immune compromised, barring drug interactions. So for your average person who's younger, it probably isn't as beneficial compared to those who are older. And of course, it's a matter of judgment. It's approved for everyone over the age of 12. So if you have a severe bout of COVID, for example, it's still available for that individual. But again, the juice is probably worth the squeeze the most for those who are older and immune compromised. In terms of the benefits of Paxlovid, we do know that it probably does mitigate the effects of getting long COVID, but probably vaccinations are much more effective and consistent in the data showing a benefit. And that's because there are probably a range of people who take Paxlovid. It's difficult to really show a huge benefit for long COVID, although there's a theoretical benefit in those who are younger.
We had another listener write in with a Paxlovid question asking, if someone has coronavirus and they take 2 days of Paxlovid and then they miss a whole day, what do we know about how oral antivirals work or don't work if taken inconsistently?
I think it hasn't been studied that way. So I can't really say with certainty that it will give you the same benefit as if you've taken it consistently once, daily or twice daily for 5 days. But because of the half-life of the drug, meaning the time it takes for the drug to be eliminated from the system, we do know that with viruses that constantly reproduce, that you need to have a certain concentration of the drug in the system for it to really continue to prevent infecting other cells from one cell that's infected with a virus. With that said, if somebody forgot 1 day's dose, I would just continue to take it because, again, there may still be a benefit. It's just probably won't be as great as in the person who's taking it consistently.
All right. We are talking with Dr. Peter Chin Hong, professor of medicine and infectious disease physician at UCSF Medical Center. He is taking your COVID questions. You can give us a call at 1-800-958-9008. We've got one listener on the line in San Francisco. Pat, what is your question for Dr. Chin Hong?
Well, good morning, Dr. Tim or Peter. I'm not sure which, but after coming through a coronavirus attack, and this is after I had the updated booster on May 29th of this year. Nevertheless, I just recovered from this COVID in June. Now I'm 85. Will I need to wear my mask, my N95 mask, and will a rebound be of concern? Yeah.
Those are great questions, Pat. First of all, I'm sorry you got COVID, and I hope you're feeling better.
Thank you.
The benefit of in terms of masking after you've gotten infected is that you probably have a force field that's really strong against getting reinfected within 1 month after you've had a bout of COVID, and perhaps as long as 3 months in some people. So in terms of being protected against COVID, you probably do have very high protection right after infection. You probably wouldn't have to worry about it, but it does bring up a general point, which is that, especially for those who are older, that early antivirals like Paxlovid and even Remdesivir can help mitigate the effects of the disease. But because, Pat, you got vaccinated so recently, it probably did allow you to stay away from the hospital. And even though you did get COVID again, it probably would have been much more severe if you hadn't gotten the vaccine within the last year or so. And, you know, in my own experience recently in the hospital, we are seeing people still with COVID in the hospital, and it's ticked up a little bit over the last few weeks. But the one unifying theme is that they're generally older now, older than 75, I would say, or very immune compromised. And nobody I've seen in the hospital has gotten the most recent shot. That is the one that was unveiled in fall of 2023. So that might be a take-home point for everyone else. And I hope you continue to get better, Pat.
All right, our next question came in from email. One of our listeners in Oakland, Miss Erica, wrote in to say she got COVID last month, finally, for the first time after 4 years of avoiding it. She's 61 and has asthma, and recovery has been slow. She's wondering if she should plan to get a booster shot every year moving forward.
Erica, again, I hope you're feeling better. Sorry you got COVID. But you were one of the novids until now. I think that, yes, I think somebody like Erica, although she's younger than 65, with asthma, I would strongly recommend that she get a shot once a year. And although the CDC, as you mentioned, Ariel, did recommend for everyone over 6 months, the priority population, those in for whom it's really critical to get it at least once a year, is those who are older than 65 or those who are immune compromised. For everybody else, it probably is important, but not as important as those other groups. But if you have comorbidities like respiratory or cardiovascular disease and you're younger, you know, that will be kind of the medium category for sure. And again, it's kind of the model of the flu shot now, where everybody is probably going to get once a year shot. And by 2025, we should probably see a lot of companies come out with two shots or two vaccines in one shot, like a influenza and COVID together. So, you know, again, it would probably be seamless and you wouldn't have to really think about it too much. That is until, you know, I think most people think COVID is going to be around and continue to evolve over time. But hopefully at some point it's going to fizzle out. Pandemics do end at some point, but the vestiges will still remain.
Our next listener we've got on the line is in Oakland. Sarah is on the line. Sarah, what is your question?
I have a question about if I blow my nose using toilet paper, is it okay to put that in compost or does it need to go into trash?
So if you blow your nose into toilet paper, I think you could probably put it in compost. I think it's fine. Again, in the hospital setting, we probably would keep it separately in separate potentially infectious waste. But I think, you know, at home that's fine. It could be either trash or compost. It doesn't have food in it. So that's the way I would think about it in terms of disposal. And again, wash your hands after, for sure.
Our next question from Ophelia in Brisbane. Ophelia, what is your question?
Yeah, I have a question about Paxlovid. Why is it that Paxlovid is so expensive, almost $2,000 for the 30 pills? And what happens to the people that don't have insurance and cannot afford to pay that amount and needs to have it? I mean, is this only for like the population that can afford it, or what does the CDC have to say about that?
That's a great question, Ophelia. I think many people don't know, not even many providers don't know, that for everyone, including people with no insurance, there's a program called PAXESS, PAXCESS. If you Google that, it takes like 2 minutes to fill it out. They don't ask for insurance status or immigration status. And after you get a prescription, it's really at no or very little cost. And nobody should be given a bill of $2,000. So I think it probably just hasn't been communicated widely enough, this program. And it was a deal that the Biden administration made with Pfizer after it went onto the market to ensure that most people still have access to it at little or no cost. So if somebody's being asked to pay $2,000, it's really a travesty, and nobody should be paying that at all.
All right. We are talking about the latest news in COVID science with Dr. Peter Chin Hong, professor and physician at UCSF Medical Center. If you have a question, you can give us a call at 1-800-958-9008. We will try to take your question on air. Our next question comes from San Francisco. We have our listener, Holly, on the line. Holly, good morning. What is your question?
Yes, good morning. I called a couple of weeks ago and asked Dr. Schwartzberg if I should get a booster after having COVID in the middle of March, or whether I should wait until the fall. And he advised I wait till the fall, that I had some immunity from having COVID. Now I'm a little concerned and wondered if he would change his mind now too, given this uptick of our numbers. And I'm 80, so I'm concerned. I'm also about to go to visit my little grandchildren, which means going through airports, etc. So I'm wondering, should I get the booster now? And then of course, again in the fall, or do you think it's safe for me to just wait till the fall?
So great question, Holly. I think given the uptick of COVID right now, and if it's 4 months since the last time you've gotten a shot and suddenly you've gotten COVID in March or so, you'd be able to get additional shot. Those over 65 are, and those who are immune compromised. And you can get it now. And when it comes out in September, you know, nobody will probably, or very few people will probably get the vaccine when it comes out in September, because you want to get the vaccine in time for the winter increase in cases. So if you get it too early, it probably won't give you the bang for the buck that you want. So I usually recommend that people for most years get it just around Halloween, and that will give the antibodies time to rise for the time when you need it the most. So if meaning that if you got the vaccine now, you'd still be able to get it, the new formulation, around Halloween to protect you for the winter. If you don't get the vaccine, just remember that if you turn positive again, have a plan for how you'll get Paxlovid if you were out of town. And, you know, I think that will be sort of the safety net. But the vaccine would be, you know, a great choice for somebody like you at this point.
All right. We also have a listener in Alameda on the line. Gabriella, what is your question?
Hi. My question is about the new guidelines. What are the new guidelines for isolation with COVID and coming out of COVID? Is that clear?
Yes. Thanks, Gabriella, for your question. I think isolation guidelines are very confusing to a lot of people, but there are several rules that are very common. And what they've tried over time is to try to simplify the rules and have it align with other respiratory illnesses like influenza and RSV. So the biggest thing is, if you're sick, very sick, and you have a fever, for example, don't go out into the world. Stay home. Number two, if you have COVID, you stay home for at least 24 hours. But if you have no fever and you're feeling better at day two, you can go out, but it's probably good to wear a mask for about 5 days, unless you test negative before the end of the 5 days. So it's still the 5 day rule, but you're not restricted to isolate all the time at home. If you're living with people who are older, particularly if they're unvaccinated recently or immune compromised, you probably would want to take it, be even more conservative at home. And you probably would want to either test to make sure you're negative before resuming normal activities at home, or wait, you know, be sort of cautious for about 10 days. So that's kind of the way we think about it right now at this time with the pandemic.
All right, we're going to squeeze in one more question. We've got Michael in Oakland. Michael, you are on the air.
Yes, good morning. My question is, you know, all the discussion is about vaccines, but it appears to me that the vaccines really don't prevent you from getting COVID so much as they cause you to have less severe symptoms and perhaps keep you out of a hospital, which is important. But it seems to me that this should be used in tandem with mask wearing, especially in crowded public spaces. And I found that has been just thrown out the window. I'm a member of Kaiser, and I go down there in Kaiser Hospital, and a lot of the employees aren't wearing masks, and most of the patients aren't. A lot of these people are sick people. I see the people coughing in the hallways. They don't even cover their mouth. Nobody seems to pay any attention to this, but in fact, I think, it seems to me, that mask wearing is probably the best thing you can do to prevent getting COVID in the first place. So I'd like your comment on that.
Michael, everything you say is right. The vaccine doesn't prevent infection. It just gives you a lower chance in the short term, within a month or so, of getting infected. And it's really good for preventing serious disease, hospitalization, and death. So it's important that way. In terms of mask wearing, certainly when people travel right now with virus surging in wastewater, we know it's very common in the community. It probably is a very important additional protection to prevent you from getting infected. And certainly you don't want your holiday plans disrupted or that family reunion or the wedding. So, you know, in crowded places, particularly when you're traveling right now, it probably is a good idea to do it. And, you know, I think in hospitals, right now with the, you know, the drop of the public health emergency, hospitals aren't mandated to have mask wearing unless patients are symptomatic and certainly if providers are symptomatic, we have to stay home or have COVID, we stay home for much longer than the guidelines. So at least 10 days and we have to test negative before coming back in. So I think we're probably, if the numbers continue to rise, there is a threshold at which masking comes back, and that's the way it's written into hospitals right now. But yes, I agree with you that I hope that masking will become part of the culture, and not just for COVID, but anytime somebody has symptoms.
All right. Really quickly, I am curious, Dr. Chin Hong, the CDC's Bridge Access Program provides free COVID vaccines to uninsured and underinsured people. They've said it's going to end in August. Does that mean the vaccines this fall will cost money out of pocket?
I think that it will be variable in different parts of the country. There is programs for different populations, but it's very, very local. I think in the Bay Area, they've always been programs for vaccines that are safety net programs, and they probably need to be reinforced, the ones that give influenza shots. So it is something that I'm nervous about. We haven't heard that the bridge is going to evolve into something else, but I'm hopeful that at least in the Bay Area, you know, some of our safety net mechanisms will kick in.
All right, that does it for this week's edition of Corona Calls. If you want to send in a question for the next one, you can shoot an email anytime to upfront@kpfa.org, or you can tune in live. We normally broadcast Mondays just after 7:30 news headlines on KPFA. We put a little bit of extra work into repackaging this live segment as a podcast because it feels like the information is useful to a lot of people, and we ought to make it accessible through as many channels as possible. You can help us get the word out by rating and reviewing it in whatever app you're using to listen. And if you want to pitch in some cash, we wouldn't say no. We always take donations at kpfa.org. I appreciate it if you mentioned Corona Calls when you make your pledge. My name is Brian Edwards-Tiegert. I hope you have a great week. Stay well. We'll talk to you next time.